T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
So it's another big sports night here in the city of Boston, and another big sports night here on the WEEI Sports Radio Network. Game 3 of the ALCS, the American League Championship Series. Red Sox and the Astros. The series is tied at 1. Eddie Rodriguez will be on the mound tonight for the Red Sox. We will talk Red Sox baseball with Buster Olney, who will join us in 8 minutes. I know we're still holding out for Jacoby Myers as well on this Patriots Monday. Patriots lose to the Cowboys in overtime, 35-29. But it's game 3 tonight over at Fenway Park, and I hope Garrett Richards has got his jacket.
Gonna be chilly.
It's gonna be about
it's cold one today. Real fall day.
45 tonight. Ooh, apparently
brisk.
Absolutely,
it's gonna be brisk.
Luckily, David Price isn't here anymore. Old fingers Tingleman. Those fingies would be tingling all up in the cold.
Does it affect the bats? Because the bats have been on fire for the Red Sox. They've hit the crap out of it outside of Game 1 in the ALDS, and then in these games so far here against the Astros, they've been able to swing it. Does that affect them?
I think we're still going to get some offense tonight, at least to start, based on the starting pitchers.
Yeah.
Neither starter for either team is necessarily a lockdown, shutdown guy. And I know that the last start out, Eddie Rodriguez did really well in that closeout game against Tampa. But if 10 is the most and 1 is the least, what's your trust level of Edrod going into tonight in the cold at Fenway?
It kind of has to be a 5. Maybe that's kind of too good. Isn't it right in the middle with him?
Because right in
it
the could meaty be part of the curve, not pulling ahead, yeah. Not falling behind.
Because if I told you Rodriguez threw 5 shutout innings or he gave up 5-1, you'd believe both. Like, they're both possible.
Totally agree.
That's just kind of the season he has had. Now, he was better the last 2 months than he was the first 2 months. But even in the series against Tampa Bay, he had a bad start, then he had a pretty good start. So I don't know what to expect out of Rodriguez. That's the whole season has been like that for him.
Is it more about the offense tonight in terms of in those first 3 innings jumping out to about as big a lead as you can get against, and I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name,
Jose Urquidy,
I do believe.
Yeah,
yes. Urquidy. Jose Urquidy.
Yeah.
Isn't it really more on hopefully the offense to say, all right, we'll go get you 4 runs early so that you can go out and be you, Eddie, whatever version of you we get tonight.
Yeah, and that helps Cora so much, too, because if it's scoreless or if it's 1 or 2 runs, you're like, all right, do I feel like I need to go to the bullpen now? Do I need to do this? Because even Game 2, as much as I like Eovaldi, if they didn't have back-to-back innings with grand slams, does he let Eovaldi go 5 1/3?
Probably not.
He may not, because it's such a quick hook for these guys that if you build up that big lead, then you know that there's no days off between games 3, 4, and 5, they're going to want Rodriguez to go as much as he can. Especially if Sale ends up coming back in game 5, you're going to have to empty the tank in game 5 with a reliever, and game 4 is probably going to be an all reliever game. Right, like, who the hell is even starting game 4? Do we know?
Yeah, TBD.
One of the best starters in the playoffs for every team.
So, is there a bullpen arm you've soured on through the first 2 games of the series? Like, I know they're not going to mess with Tanner Houck, and he gave up a couple of runs in that game 1.
Yeah,
but you know, are you still Ottavino, Whitlock, Brazier? So, are you still riding those guys?
I think you kind of have to with now. Yeah, I mean, I like Whitlock, obviously. I think Robles is a guy that you're like, when he's out there, I think just my feeling, he is a guy that should be higher end because he pitched himself into that spot.
Mm-hmm.
But then now I'm not as sold on him anymore. I get nervous anyway when Robles is on the mound.
Yeah, I do not need to see Hernandez again out of the bullpen. And I that Darwinson came in and that was a 9-3 game or something like that that he came into.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Hernandez and Sawamura weren't on the ALDS roster and now they're on this one, but that still speaks to how they even viewed him. So like they're there all the time and you're just used to those guys going. I still think Ottavino though, I think has turn the page a little bit as being one of those guys that you might trust. Don't you think?
I can buy that.
I mean, he again had a roller coaster season like a lot of those guys back there.
He's down the trust list, but he's on it.
Yeah. But I mean, Whitlock's your best guy. You still have, I think in a big spot with the right matchup, Taylor's fine.
Well, I was just going to say, who's your first guy out of the bullpen tonight?
What inning is it?
Starting the fourth.
So I have to start the fourth with a reliever.
So Eddie gave you whatever through three innings. You going to Pivetta?
Who's starting tomorrow though?
Well,
that's the thing. You could go with Pivetta, then you might actually start him tomorrow.
Well, and that's you know what I
Nick Pivetta really
yeah dog. It might really be him.
I didn't think of that in terms of who
that's
going to
start.
Who's going to start game four,
I mean,
but...
It might be Ottavino again.
Martin Perez.
Or, you know what?
Martin Perez.
If they keep their lineup the same, the Astros,
yep.
And it's Brantley, Bregman, Alvarez, so two out of three are lefty, I could see Taylor coming in even in that spot, even at that early, just to get those two guys.
So Taylor gives you an inning to get to a different part of the lineup, yeah. And then you bring in a right-hander and sort
from
of
there.
Go from there.
I think so.
And that... Look at you.
See, look at the big brain on me
look
over
at you,
here.
Rich
it's all about matchups.
Look at you.
I got my TI-83 calculator helping me with all these different
I didn't know I was working with Ron Renicky over here.
Oh, yeah, right. But I mean, I think you're going to have to piece it together. But that's where the key comes in because what's the score? How many innings does Rodriguez go? Because all right, let's set the over-under on him at... Four and a third.
Oh.
Because that's what the Vegas one is. It's four and a third.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm still going under. I'm going under on both guys.
Yeah. I think your Keady is probably going under, and I think Rodriguez is going under.
Can the starters on both sides combine to get 18 outs? So each through three innings, and then we're on to the bullpen.
I was going
to
say, it'll be 9:30 at night, it'll be the fourth inning, and there'll be two new guys on the mound.
You're killing me.
That's what's going
to
happen.
Drinking coffee at 7 o'clock. To be
exactly what happened in game two, basically.
After your late night. But
that was Saturday. I could DVR it, and I had extra time to be able to go back and watch
but
it.
But that one, I'm not as freaked out about the game two time because of the injured pitcher, and then that's like, all right, 20 minutes for this guy to like stretch and put his cleats on and everything else. That took forever.
Odorizzi took forever.
But like that's sort of different than just like a regular pitching change,
right?
Like that dude left hurt, so now it's like, all right, take as much time as you want. He's like, okay, I will.
I will.
I'll take every
second. He's like stretching out there.
He's like,
gets out of his lawn chair out in the bullpen, comes running in.
He's like, actually, guys, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. Like, oh my god, well, he's warming up in there.
He had a shoestring break, something of that nature. So it is a 7:07 pregame right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. An 8:08 first pitch tonight.
Woo!
You get an 8:08 first pitch tomorrow. And then 5:08 on Wednesday.
Getaway day. I don't know what that's about. I'll take it because that game also will end around 9:30. So I'll take the 5 o'clock start. I have no problem with that. I'll take it.
I forgot we're averaging like 4.5 hours now on these.
These games are super long.
I mean, it's almost like bullpen roulette in a lot of ways.
You're going to see a lot of guys.
It's just arm after arm after arm coming out of the bullpen. And
game two was actually light. There was only 10 total pitchers in the game.
8-0 early kind of
helps.
That helps.
Then you're like, all right, game's over. Just you're going to have to wear it. Odorizzi went four.
And do we know anything about this series that we didn't know going in? Like, did we learn
anything in the first two games? Nope. I think Sale, unfortunately, was as advertised. I think the bats remained hot. That was a question. They've been able to do that. And here you go. Now you have that's down to a five-game series.
Let's go to the Harbor One hotline. By the way, Jacoby Meyer is going to join us at 1:30. So we're told here on Patriots Monday. But it is game three of the American League Championship Series tonight. Buster Olney of ESPN joins us on the Harbor One hotline. Good afternoon, Buster. And let me ask you the question I just asked Rich Keefe. Did we learn anything about the Astros or the Red Sox in these first two games of this series that we didn't really already know?
Oh, without a doubt that the Astros situation with their starting pitching is something that they might not be able to overcome. I can't remember a situation where I've seen a playoff team basically lose three starting pitchers in the way that the Astros have, from Zach Greinke going down to McCullers going down to the other day, game two losing their starter early on. And if you're Dusty Baker and you're sitting here now, you're wondering where you're going to get innings from. It's an open question. It's funny. A lot of teams now are using this opener strategy. You know, it used to be staffs had a long man and there was more depth. But now where the Astros sit, they're going to have to rely on so many guys pitching in, who are not necessarily trained to pitch deeper into games. And it's going to be a real challenge for them.
Well, it's funny you say that, Buster, because here in Boston, we're looking at the Red Sox staff and they got like one real starter. And it seems like guys are getting these quick hooks and they're kind of struggling. You don't know who to rely on. But is it fair to say that the 13 pitchers for the Red Sox right now are better than the 13 pitchers for the Astros?
I don't think there's any question about it, especially with all the, potential injury concerns on the Astros side where you wonder, how they're going to respond. Where on the other hand, with the Red Sox, you do at least have the one guy in Eovaldi where you feel like, okay, when he pitches, he's a guy who can give you, five, six, seven innings. They do have some guys who seem prepared to, go into the middle innings if you needed them to. If Pivetta starts at game four, it wouldn't shock anybody if you were to throw four or five innings. If Houck were to be asked to go four or five innings, he can do that. On Dusty's side, I don't know if he's necessarily got a lot of options like that. He's going to have to rely. I mean, think of it like, a sprint relay team. It's almost like the Astros have to rely on six or seven guys in most of these games going forward. And that's going to be difficult because you're talking about having to rely on a soft underbelly of your staff as opposed to, one guy like Eovaldi taking on a bunch of innings.
Buster Olney of ESPN. He is the National Baseball Insider, and he's with Gresh and Keefe here on the Harbor One Hotline. What did you make of Alex Cora's decision to start Chris Sale in game one?
I think it was about him trying to find out information early on. Okay, what can Sale give us? I'm sure that they hoped that with the adjustments they talked about, with him being more upright, that he would be better, and he wasn't. He gave him something, but I think that Alex, as he moves forward now, they can feel like, okay, we've learned about Chris Sale, that he's followed the same trajectory that a lot of guys coming back from Tommy John surgery have followed, in that there is regression. And maybe as we saw in 2018 when they won the World Series, maybe there's going to be some spots where Sale can help them, matchup against a certain hitter in a big moment. Maybe it's going to be Brantley where you could call on him to get, big out. But the idea that, Sale is necessarily going to be a guy who's going to go five or six innings. I got to believe that after what we saw the other day, that's not something Alex is going to count on.
Where do you think the Red Sox turn for their starter in game four and game five if it's not Sale?
Well, I would expect that it would, the way that it came up the other day, and I was not down in Houston, but I had Dan Shulman, who's doing play-by-play on ESPN radio for the series. He said that when they were doing the post-game show, or the post-game wrap-up after game two, they looked out in the Red Sox bullpen and Pivetta was throwing. And if you track that, what that could mean is that Pivetta potentially could be their starter in game four, because that would be the the sort of schedule that you would keep if that's what you're going to do. Now, you know Alex well enough to know that if Erod goes out tonight and he doesn't throw well early and he needs to reach for somebody, he would reach for Pivetta because I think he has confidence in the other guys, but I think Pivetta potentially could be a guy to watch for in game four. And in game five, it'll just depend in part on what happens the next two nights.
Buster Olney of ESPN with Gresh and Keefe. He's with us on the Harbor One Hotline. Are you anticipating any major lineup changes on either side here for these games at Fenway Park?
No, not necessarily. Because the offense isn't a concern for either side at this point. It's all about what they can get out of their pitching. And by the way, you know what I mentioned before about not necessarily knowing for sure who's going to start in a game five. I mean, welcome to baseball in 2021, mm-hmm. right? Where you see the Dodgers, decide the day before game five of the division series against the Giants. You know what? We're going to go with Corey Knebel. He's going to be the guy who's going to start. And then we're going to finish with Max Scherzer for his first career save. That's what they did again in game one of the NLCS against the Braves. I think all of these teams are getting accustomed to this idea of, we can stitch together 27 outs some way or some fashion. I just think that some teams are better equipped to do it. I think in this moment, the Red Sox are better equipped to do that with the group that they have than the Astros. And maybe the Braves are better equipped to do it because they have more innings out of their starters than the Dodgers do at this point.
Big picture, Buster, I was wondering, looking at this ALCS, there's basically one starter between the two teams that you expect to go more than five innings. Like, not seven, but five. Will there be in the off season or the next couple of off seasons sort of this push where GMs say, why would I spend $15, $20, $25, $30 million on a starter where chances are I'm just going to be doing bullpen games in the playoffs anyway?
That is absolutely a legitimate question for 10,000 feet. Okay. If you look at it from above, I can tell you there's a conversation going on at 30,000 feet where people in the sport are saying, is this really a good product? Is this where we want to go? I was at the All-Star game this year, and an officer in the union came up to me and said, hey, what do you think about the number of pitchers being used? And I said, I'll tell you what, everybody I talked to at the team level believes it stinks. They hate it. They hate the parade of relievers because, guys, we all grew up with, Sandy Koufax versus Bob Gibson, with Pedro Martinez against Roger Clemens. They were the headliners. And not only is it not great for the product, it's not great for the union to exactly your point that, you know what, the value of starting pitchers are being diminished. Teams are saying, you know what, it's better to pay 10 relievers $1 million apiece than invest $25 million in one starting pitcher. And the union knows this, which is why I think there's going to be a conversation from a very big picture level of how can there be a way to restrict the number of pitchers used in each game. My idea has been to say going into a 9-inning game, managers are limited to either 4 or 5 pitchers per 9 innings with obvious exceptions for blowouts and injuries. I think the sport's going to need it because while it's a fun game for, you know, some managers and pitching coaches maybe to play it in these moments, from a product standpoint, I think it's terrible for baseball.
Buster, so in a weird way, might there be people behind the scenes in the game rooting for a guy like a Max Scherzer to kind of remind everyone, a la the Giants and Madison Bumgarner, Wainwright in St. Louis, that, hey, having the stud starter who you know could give you 7 innings, but also could come back 2 days later and maybe close it out in the back end of a game for you, a la Schilling, you know, in the early 2000s.
Right.
Are there people maybe in the game rooting that, hey, I don't care who wins, but if Scherzer's a stud, it's going to remind everybody the value of starters?
I think that, generally speaking, at the team level, that people would love to see in moments a return back to those days when Madison Bumgarner is the Hulk Hogan of the sport. No question about when Pedro Martinez is the Hulk Hogan of the sport. And they understand why managers do what they do. They know, you know, why the Rays started the opener strategy. They know it's worked for a lot of teams. It's worked in a moment like we did with the Dodgers and Scherzer the other night. But they also know it's not something that can draw in casual fans. to have a parade of relievers that no one's ever going to know or talk about, you know, 10 years from now is not something that can be sustainable for baseball.
And this may also not be sustainable, but it's been a hell of a run. Kike Hernandez is the hottest player in baseball, and it's been so fun to watch him in the series against Tampa, where if they gave out an ALDS MVP, he probably would have won it. And he's only been better here in the series against Houston. It's pretty interesting, Buster, that it seems like every couple of years there's a non-All-Star that just looks like a Hall of Famer in the playoffs, and right now that's what Hernandez is doing.
He's killing it. It reminds me, you guys, in 2015, when Daniel Murphy, it felt like he was hitting a home run every plate appearance for the Mets. He goes off. It's the fun part of October where we can all ask ourselves the question, okay, who's going to be the surprising hero today? You know, who's going to step up? And I got to believe that their general managers around baseball, maybe even within the Dodgers organization, saying, why didn't we sign this guy? The idea that Kike Hernandez is having this type of success on a two-year, $14 million contract when he clearly is a player worth more than that because of you know, his track record. And I remember talking to Alex Cora in the spring about when they signed him, and he said, look, we want versatile guys, and we want guys who've won before. And Kike Hernandez, when these playoffs are going on, his heart rate's at 60 when a lot of other guys go in 120. And that's, you know, he's been tremendous for the Red Sox.
Buster, I know we're up against it here, but the Braves have a 2-0 series lead in the NLCS over the Dodgers. Are the Dodgers in real trouble, or is this the proverbial, we got them right where we want them?
Yeah, and I got to tell you guys, going into the LCS rounds, I think I got every pick wrong. As you know, I picked the Yankees to beat the Red Sox. I beat the Rays to beat the Red Sox. So my track record is not good. In this round, I picked the Red Sox to beat the Astros, and I picked the Braves to beat the Dodgers. I do think the Dodgers are in trouble. I think the fact that they went into the LCS with their pitching kind of a jumbled because of how they were extended in that series against San Francisco could be difference-making. And the fact is, as great as the Dodgers, you know, how many great players they have, they're not as good as they were last year. Their offense is not as good. They don't have as much margin for error. I think Max Muncy getting hurt on the eve of the playoffs was absolutely devastating for them because in the middle of every, you know, pass through the lineup, he would always throw out a great plate appearance. He would stress the opposing pitchers. And to not have him, I think, is going to hurt them in this series.
Buster, thanks for the time. Do you try to avoid Rob Bradford over there at Fenway like we do? You know, like a guy who looks like he's homeless walking up to you wanting to talk baseball?
You know, I do, but, you know, we've known each other for so long, I just have to put up with him for a few minutes, and then I can move on.
Kind of like us here at WEEI. Yeah. There you go. Hey, Buster, thanks for the time again. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, sir.
Okay, guys, take care.
Thanks, Buster.
And we got a little dig at Bradford in there. Perfect. From Buster. Perfect.
I'm glad he brought up the point about how even inside Major League Baseball, they recognize the pitcher thing as not good for the sport. Because it isn't. Because think about growing up going to games, or even not even growing up, even like 10 years ago, if you were going to a game, you'd say, hey, I'm going to the game tonight. There'd be two questions. Who are they playing and who's pitching?
You're right.
You'd always want to know who's pitching. And as a kid who went to a lot of Tim Wakefield games, they weren't as exciting as you find out your buddy's going to the Pedro game. And like, you son of a, you got an extra one? Like, the Pedro game was worth its weight in gold. Yeah, I saw like every Wakefield start for like 6 years. No offense, Tim, but I saw you start a lot of games. I wanted a Pedro game. I think I went to like one Pedro game and it was the best. Like, and then, or whoever it was, even if it was an opponent, like, oh, Randy Johnson's pitching today. Holy crap.
The starter made an appointment
it was,
television or
right.
an appointment listening.
And now
not...
it's like, what does it matter? He's going to be out in the third anyway.
Yeah, here, who's tonight's opener? What?
Who do you think the first guy in from the pen will be? That's what it's turned into.
You're more worried about your bottle opener than you are who is opening for the for the team you're rooting for at that point in time. All right, we hope to close out Patriots Monday in a very big way with Jakobi Meyers of the Patriots. But right now, I could have made a big joke, but instead, here's Shime ready to trend.
Andy Gresh and Rich Keefe. This is Gresh and Keefe on EEI.
Want to remind you that Mac Jones joins Marloni and Foyer coming up an hour from now. As you heard, those guys will be on the road, but it's time for us to wrap up our portion of Patriots Monday. Joining us right now on the Harbor One Hotline He was the Patriots' leading receiver with 5 receptions yesterday for 44 yards. Jacoby Myers joins Gresh and Keefe, and Jacoby is brought to us by Zuti. Build any app your company needs in a week. Visit Zuti.com for details. Botello Lumber, your local Anderson Windows dealer, and by Truly Hard Seltzer. Jacoby Myers, good afternoon. I asked Lawrence Guy this question earlier, and I want to ask it to you. What was the vibe and the feel, Jacoby, after last night's game where you all played your heart out and you lose a heartbreaker in overtime?
What's going on, fellas? Yeah, that's a good question, man. Losing close games like that almost hurt worse, you know, because you feel like you did enough to win, but you missed a couple plays that you'll probably think about all night to keep you up at night. So you'd almost rather get blown out. At least that way you kind of live with it easier. But losing close games, those definitely hurt most.
All right, sorry, Jacoby. We're just going to put you on hold real quick. We're having a tough connection here. It sounds like a little bit like you're underwater.
Yes.
But we'll get that worked out.
We will hopefully
get that. Good answer,
though,
because I had a feeling that the losing close is tougher than getting blown out. And you saw this Sunday, there's a lot of blowouts across. It's probably easier for those teams to just say, okay, not our day. Come back and get them the next time. Whereas when you lose a game in overtime, which, again, I think there was 3 overtime games this weekend, you can really go back to one play or 2 plays and say, man, the outcome would have been different had this happened.
So you had Cowboys-Patriots go to OT.
Yeah.
You had the Sunday night game in the Steelers and the Seahawks. They went to overtime. By the way, they also had an injury in that game that added 15 minutes of getting the guy on the cart.
It was a terrible game.
It was not.
Just because it's
game.
Overtime doesn't mean it's always good. This one was, though. So let's see if he's back.
Yeah, and Viking-Panthers went to OT. Jacoby, I think we got you back.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes, yeah, we can. So, Jacoby, you had what looked like a touchdown and a great play, great catch. You got into the end zone and team celebrating, and then you find out that there was a hold on the play. At what point did you find out, and how did you find out that that was coming back?
I didn't even realize until after we all celebrated, so I went way back to the phone, official asking for the ball. I'm like, nah, I want to take this one. And they say, you sure? I'm like, what do you mean? Are you sure? Like, I look around to the flag and go, like, oh, man, my heart just dropped a little bit. But the thing about football is you don't really have time to kind of step back. So you kind of have to get back to them and get ready for the next play.
Jacoby, we are still having connection issues. We'll try to get you squared away one more time here. So third time's a charm.
You know what sucks is the answers have been great.
Fantastic.
That's a really good answer because he – like, that's a little nugget that I didn't notice from the game is that he said, I'm going to keep this ball. It's his first career touchdown.
Right.
Or so we thought. And the ref goes, you sure you want that ball? He's like, yeah, why wouldn't I want this? He's like, well.
And then you got to realize what went down. But, you know, Myers got targeted 6 times. It was 5 catches for 44 yards. And the one thing that jumps out is I know there was the Bourne play for 75 yards.
Right.
But for what felt like the first time during the season, there were some chunk plays in there. Henry had that 20-yard catch that turned into the touchdown. Aguilar's catch was for 27 yards. Even Stevenson, you know, I think it was the route that he bent around the linebacker, which actually might have been Micah Parsons. He had a 20-yard catch. And I know there is the, oh, I want Mac Jones to throw it way down the field like he did to like he did to Bourne to be able to.
Right.
It doesn't really work that
way.
No,
it's not going to happen all the time.
And the NFL has really, yes, there are teams that do push it down the field, but the NFL is becoming much more of a catch and run league than it is Al Davis rare back and throw it 60 yards down the field to some guy.
There's definitely a lot of that. Now, you've also mentioned in the past, and I completely agree, if they had a true number one receiver like a CeeDee Lamb or an Amari Cooper from this week, or again, there's so many different examples around the league, a guy like Jacoby Myers I think would be even better. Like if he had that other guy on the outside, because he's running some of the Edelman stuff, not exclusively Edelman routes, but it's a lot of that. And right now, if you just take what he's done through 6 games and you kind of project it out for a full season, if I told you Jacoby Myers is going to end the year with 96 grabs for 923 yards, just sign up for that?
Yes, yeah. I would. And I think that what the Patriots are also finding out, too, is especially with those wide receivers, that you can take the best corner and be situational. So if you think that it's 3rd and 5 and Myers is going to get the ball, even though he's lined up in the slot, you can take your best corner and put them on him because you're not worried about those other guys on the outside. And I think it's now gotten to a point to where it's really critical mass at that spot in terms of what is going on and how other teams have responded. And I know that you're very much down on Jonnu Smith. We've talked about the tight ends.
Yeah.
But if you just have one guy on the outside that you have to respect, it changes everything. And I hate to go back to Moss because, I think that we've evolved from the, you know, take the top off the defense guy. But if you had that guy lined up out wide, it would change everything for Mac Jones in this offense.
But it's also, I mean, they had some really, really good offenses where they didn't have that guy, but because Gronk and Edelman were just so good.
Bingo.
So that's also a big part of it. But that's the point, is Smith and Henry are so far removed. Not that you expect them to be Gronk. Nobody did. But they're so far beneath that that they're the ones that need the help for the receiver. Whereas Gronk and maybe even a guy like Kelce or a guy like Kittle, they can actually help make the receiver rather than what you normally see around the league, which is the other way.
And when you think about it, like Brady won a Super Bowl throwing to Gronk and Edelman, and everybody in the building knew it, and they still couldn't stop it.
Right.
And that's where...
One of those Super Bowls, Gronk wasn't even there. It was just Edelman.
It was just Edelman. And when you think of it, it was Edelman and Amendola. Those were the two guys that they worked it off of. But, you know, it's funny. If you could get a planet player at wide receiver or a planet player at tight end right now for this offense, which would you take?
I want the receiver. I want the receiver. And here's why. I think we've seen two quarterbacks really just improve greatly with the addition of a true number one receiver. Dak Prescott was good as a rookie. He won a lot of games, but it was a lot of Ezekiel Elliott running. Ezekiel Elliott was a dominant force that year, but he won a lot of games and he was good. When they got Amari Cooper, and I don't even think Cooper is the world's greatest receiver, but he's a legitimate wideout. They got him, things changed. Dak Prescott got a whole lot better. Josh Allen, not nearly as good as Dak Prescott his first couple of years. Then Steph Diggs shows up, and next thing you know, he's this stud guy. So I think that's obviously coaching is a factor in that. It's the player himself. But having that true number one receiver that just takes so much attention from the defense but can also make plays. So if you throw like a jump ball, 50-50 ball, guess what? The receiver is going to come up with it more often than not. If Mac Jones has one of those guys, you feel even better about his progression.
And you're going to have confidence to throw it up there to him because from a size standpoint, well, you got Nikhil Harry. We could do it.
Right.
But he might fall down. He might trip over
could
a line.
Hurt himself.
He like wipe out.
We talked about Mac Jones at Alabama a lot. Like, he's got so many guys, Like, okay, that's true. But his numbers were so off the charts, and he threw so many touchdowns. And that's because he had two elite wide receivers. And even Waddle was hurt most of the year, but he had the best receiver in football, and he made him look like that.
And I do think that Mac Jones going through this, and I know we've talked a lot about this team and growth, and Lawrence Guy talked about it a little bit earlier with us. The fact that Mac Jones is still able to get this offense moving in the right direction, and I know they're not perfect. Don't get us wrong, folks. Like, it's not the, everything is okay. But the fact that Mac Jones is going through this, and if you compare it to that Alabama team, like you said, without that high-end talent, and he's still moving it at the NFL level, that kind of shows us that this guy has got a ceiling. This guy has been able to fit in pretty much right away. And I know there are those like Wiggy who are looking for unrealistic results, quite honestly, from this guy.
Yeah.
But he has shown us, again, that on the whole, he ain't the problem in trying to get this offense going to where it needs to go.
No, and I think he's one touchdown pass shy of Cam Newton's total from a year ago.
Oh, my.
Yeah. Now, what about the rushing touchdowns, Keith? And another rushing touchdown. Yeah, but he is handling himself. Again, I thought it was a bad throw on the pick six, but you're going to have moments like that.
Yeah.
He also started the game without an incompletion for the longest time, and they barely had any possessions. Just the way the game was going, they had the one short field, and they capitalized on it. The Cowboys had a long drive, and it was just you looked up, and you're like, God, this offense hasn't even been on the field yet. They like barely had any opportunities.
And when you think of Mac and the rookie moments, right, there might have been – what, two or three? Game one, the whole trying to throw it backwards and causing the...
So there was that one.
There was that one to Jonnu Smith.
The low throw to Jacoby Myers in the first game as a third down throw, and like Myers was open and he could have had him. I think the pick six in this game...
But on the
Because, like, the sack fumble, like, no, nobody's blaming him on that. My God. It was one of those play-action passes. He turned his back to the line of scrimmage, and the next thing you know, Randy Gregory was just in his lap.
And, by the way, Brady might have broken half if he got hit that hard.
Yeah, if anything, it's impressive that Mac Jones stayed in the game after that.
That's true, because when you look at that hit and you saw him get up, he was definitely kind of wobbly, and then it was... All right, I'm going to put on my brave face. You know, yeah. I'm not going to cry. I'm not going to cry in front of the homeroom. I'm
He's
not going to cry.
He's been hit a lot.
He really has been. And there hasn't been the true rookie moment where you're like, oh, he filled the back of the britches. Like
there was another game, by the way, where he had over 70% completions. Another game.
Yeah.
And all bought the Saints game.
Put Jamar Chase in there, and what
might
would
look a little bit different. Yep.
By the way, Jamar Chase on that block on the Mixon touchdown throw.
Oh yeah,
complete. I'm so
you're
in
all
on
in
that.
On him now.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, what an unselfish play,
right.
From a player at a very selfish position.
They got a good offense there, Cincinnati.
They're not bad. No. They could be 2021 good when it's all said and done. We will. Well, we don't have time for 3T because we try to get in Jacoby Myers.
That was a good interview.
Well, yeah, listen. He did as good as we could ask him to. Bills Titans on Monday Night Football. A really good. I have an audio. You got something for all of us to analyze for YGS next.
Back to more Boston Sports Talk. Gresh and Keith on EEI.
Time for You Got Something. It is sponsored by Unified Office. If you run restaurants, don't lose football takeout orders or reservations due to customers getting busy signals or being stuck on hold. Get the solution at unifiedoffice.com. I hope I do not completely derail us for You Got Something because we know Maloney and Fourier are on the road. But at the end of the lightly attended, Keith, Bill Belichick Zoom press conference today.
Yes.
After he was on the Greg Hill Show.
Uh-huh.
You're going to hear the voice of Stacey James, who will be thanking the people that were on there. And then you're going to hear what I think is a fart.
Thank you, Coach. Thanks, Mike, Phil, Nick, and Joaquin for asking questions. Thanks, guys.
So
that
could be, or is it a chair moving?
I thought it might have been someone hanging up, but...
No,
sounded like
I thought it could be like a chair. Like if you're in a chair, not a wheelchair, but like a chair that has like you know like legs.
A chair with wheels.
That's what I meant. Thank you. That, when you stand up, it kind of has that. You think? Maybe not. I don't know.
One more time, John, please.
Asking questions. Thanks, guys.
Or you think somebody just turned and stuck their butt in the microphone?
Or it might have been Belichick getting up.
Could be
like a Wendy Williams deal
for asking questions. Thanks, guys.
Yes, Wendy Williams. Both ends.
Shime, you got something.
I do, guys. So I wanted to try and make 2-4 Patriot fans feel better.
Okay.
So I found this on Reddit from a Bears fan following the Aaron Rodgers taunting celebration.
This will be good. Prescott.
It's one thing as a fan to see Aaron Rodgers saunter into the end zone to score the game-sealing touchdown with his own two hands. But to hear him stare at the crowd and yell, I own you, I still own you, crushed my soul to a new level.
Yeah.
It served as a reminder that Rodgers isn't just an idea, he's a guy that comes into our city and bleeps my bleep up every year. Aaron Rodgers is the boogeyman, and I fully expect him to be there when I die, staring into my eyes, smiling softly, I still own you.
I mean, the best Halloween costume around Chicago would be Aaron Rodgers, wouldn't it?
That'd be the scariest thing to see.
The ultimate boogeyman in Chicago is Aaron Rodgers, yeah.
You'd also be inviting yourself to get your ass kicked.
Well, there's a little bit of that.
John, you got something.
I do. So over the weekend, Mike Garafolo providing an update on the vaccination status of one Cameron Newton.
Nothing really imminent with Newton right now, but teams have had communication throughout the first couple of weeks of the season with him, and I am told that those teams have been told that Cam Newton is now vaccinated. That is according to sources to me and Ian Rappaport. Now, this
looks like Cam got the poke, and, you know, maybe Washington could be in on that. Seattle possibly in on Cam. You guys think he's getting a chance?
I don't.
Nope. Cam, don't change your mind.
So.
That's 6 weeks of unemployment. I'm one of the 32 best guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, what do you got?
I got something. Actually, a perfect segue, John. Cam Newton was at DC FanDome Saturday. So Saturday was DC FanDome. We're going to talk about it on the Dork Podcast tonight. Basically, it is an online event where DC just unloads a whole bunch of teasers, trailers, behind-the-scenes footage of their movies, TV shows, video games, and comic books. So why was Cam Newton there, you ask? Well, he is a massive Superman fan. He and his hat company, Mashika, you know how he wears hats all the time, like these fedoras?
Okay.
So he is teaming up with Superman to make these hats. There's at least four hats out right now. The Superman 1, Man of Steel, Man of Steel 2, and Clark Kent. So they're all different designs. They have stuff that's related to Superman on there. There's two prices. Two of them are one price, two of them are another. Do you want to guess the high price or the low price?
Good luck, Gresh.
I was going to say, considering there's some branding and these are nice hats.
Superman fedora hats by Cam Newton.
I'm going to go $8.95.
Ooh, you're pretty close. Shine, you want to take a stab?
I know the answer, so I don't want to cheat.
On the low end, you can get one for $750, and on the high end, $950. So if you're eyeing that Man of Steel hat, it's going to set you back $950.
Dear Lord!
It's a lot cheaper to look like an a-hole than that.
Can't I just buy a cheap fedora and slam a Superman sticker on it and be good?
It's kind of like what they did here, so yes.
They put a nice pin on it, okay, Rich?
But I'm sitting there watching it. I'm waiting for like the Batman trailer to pop up, and all of a sudden Cam Newton's like, "Hey, guys, what's up, DC fandom?" I'm like, what the hell?
Why wasn't he wearing it at that Auburn game that he was at with shirtless Bruce Pearl? That's it for us on a Patriots Monday. Marloni and Fourier are coming up next, and then Red Sox baseball this evening. Pregame a little after 7, first pitch a little after 8 o'clock. John and Shime produced it. If something went wrong, blame them. We will see you tomorrow, where we will talk with Peter King, among others. Everybody have a great... Oh, and Matt Turner! I'm sorry!
Do the Sox win tonight?
Yes.
Yeah, I agree.
And we will do some communist football tomorrow as well. Go on to the Jets, ALCS. See you tomorrow at 10 a.m. Lou and Christian are next.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.